Hey guys, and welcome to Moms and Murder, a true crime podcast featuring myself, Mandy, and my dear friend, Melissa. Hi, Melissa.
Hi, Mandy. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you this week?
I'm lovely. Oh, okay. I'm something. I'm always something. Yeah. Doing well. How are you?
Great.
We've been around each other for how many hours now? Like
maybe, a lot.
Yeah.
I know. We have.
Yeah.
We spend a lot of time together. But I love it.
It's really rough, guys. No, it's nice. This summer's been really great, so.
It has been.
Yay.
So we actually don't have really any announcements this week, which is great because the last episode we said we didn't, and then we talked for 10 minutes about nothing. So this week we don't really have any announcements. We did just want to give a quick shout out to one of our new listeners who happens to be one of our existing listeners, moms. So it's kind of all come full circle. It's Moms and Murder, and then now our listener has
right.
her mom listening to us, and we're so excited. And so we're talking about Channing's mom.
Jules. Hi, Jules.
Hi, Jules. Thanks for listening to us.
And thanks for being okay with your daughter listening to us and not really asking any questions about why she's listening to moms who talk about murder.
Moms.
Yeah. Thank you.
This week's story is about how one night of harmless mischief turned into a tragedy for a group of six young men in Antelope Lake, California. Melissa.
Yes, Mandy.
Mischievous things.
Okay.
Have you done mischievous things ever before?
So I actually texted my mom earlier and said.
You had to ask your mom.
I did. I said, hey, mom, do you remember anything I did as a kid, like to be a nuisance or, you know, overall.
Pain.
Yeah. To other people. And she wrote back three words. No Barney Fife.
I love that so much.
Isn't that great?
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
So I have nothing. Mandy, what about you?
Oh, my gosh. Okay. So I can just think about, like, I just remember back to this one year. I was about 16 or 17, and it was just – it was a year. I'll tell you what. So it was an election year. Okay. And so I was really into politics as a 17-year-old. I don't know why.
Right.
I just was really into it. I wanted to be a lawyer one day. And so I would follow a lot of news stuff. And that's kind of just what I did. So I was really passionate about like the side of the fence that I was on at the time. I'm not going to say which side it was, but I had gone out and like stolen like the opposite
sign. Oh,
they had so one of my neighbors had like a sign in their yard for the other party, not the one that I was into. And I got my friends together one night and we went out and stole the sign out of their yard and threw it in a lake across the street. And we actually wrote on site with sidewalk chalk on their driveway and said that like their candidate
sucked.
Yeah.
Mandy, your neighbor? That is the most not bright thing
like,
I've ever heard.
Not like my direct neighbor, but it was like a few houses down and like around a little corner thing. So then it gets better because I thought like no one's ever going to know that we did this or whatever. Well, I don't know. I guess I had forgotten. But the next morning, a police officer knocked on our door and my mom answered it. And he said like, I need to talk to you. Like, I think, you know, like maybe you have a child here who did something last night, like that we need to like talk about,
no.
like, you know, and so because what I had actually done, and this is like so stupid, but after I wrote with sidewalk chalk on their driveway, I literally numbered all the sidewalks back to my house. Like, I wrote like 1, 2, 3 on every single piece of sidewalk.
Literal breadcrumbs all the way.
Yeah. And so thankfully the officer who responded to that was also on my side. So he was really nice. And he was like, well, you have to like return the sign. And I said, I threw it in the lake. And he's like, well, you have to go down to get her a new sign. And then you have to scrub off of her driveway, like where you wrote on her driveway. So I did that. And but that's just an example of mischievous behavior that I took part in.
We had like during election years in 2000. So remember that was the one with the hanging chads here in the States. And that was like all the recount was happening in Florida. So it was all happening in Tallahassee. So my friends and I, being the really cool people we were, would just drive around in the car all near where all this was going on. Cause it was just, we had cameras in Tallahassee for once.
Yeah.
And we would just scream out the window in hopes that we would be on CNN that night.
Oh yeah.
And my friend popped a tire on the way. And that's back whenever you had like the only cell phone somebody had was one of the giant brick ones.
Yeah.
And his grandmother was not very happy. But I always love that story. I don't know. You know how you have those memories that pop in your head and you're like, that one's so fun and so dumb. we were never on TV. Nobody cared. They hated us.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, Mandy, we got to get to this story.
Okie dokie. So I mentioned that this tragedy took place in Antelope Lake, California. And Melissa, did we Google this city?
I really attempted to Google the city. There was a lot of information about Antelope Lake. You'd be surprised. Antelope Lake lies in the beautiful Indian Valley area in central Plumas County. It's around 5,000 feet up and measures about 15 miles around the shoreline. End. That's it.
That's literally all there is.
Well, there is one more thing. There is no dump station at Antelope Lake Campgrounds. So,
okay. So take your trash with you.
Take your garbage with you.
All right.
And this will come into the story. Like, there's really nothing about there. This. Right. Yeah. It was a great time Googling.
All right. So we'll just get right into it then.
Yeah.
It was Friday night, July 1st, 2011. And Rory McGuire, Justin Smith, Robert Osornio, John and Tommy Chanley, and Joe Crawford were looking for a party. The young men were all in their 20s and hoping to find something to do that 4th of July weekend. Even better if they found some girls they could hang out with. The six of them piled into Rory's little Chrysler Sebring and took off on the hour drive from Susanville, California to Antelope Lake, where they had heard about a house party that was happening that night. But when they arrived at the lake, they were never able to find the party. And that's when the guys decided to drive around in search of something to do.
So speaking of Chrysler Sebrings, as you get further into the office, Mandy, who is still watching The Office, by the way.
I am. I'm now into season 2. I'm so excited.
Yeah. Okay. You guys hear this? I've been getting crap for years about this. Michael Scott drives a Chrysler Sebring. So when I saw this in the story, I was really excited.
Yay.
I always have to make an Office connection. All right. There's my one. I'll try and stay off of it. One of the men had brought along a bright spotlight, and so they all decided to stop near a local campsite and have themselves a little bit of fun. They pulled off the road and plugged in the spotlight and shined it down on a group of campers as a prank. The men laughed and got a kick out of it when the campers came out of their tents yelling and telling them to knock it off. When the men got back into the car to head home, six people in a Chrysler Sebring. That was hard for me.
I did want to bring that up too because does it even have like a three-person backseat?
I thought it might. It's like a little convertible bucket seat.
Do they not have bucket seats in the back? Or is it like, does it go all the way across in the back? I don't know how you got six
either
people
Either way,
there.
That's four people in the back. I mean, you can't put three in the front.
I mean, were they riding in laps?
No vehicles. They've had to do some creative shuffling in the vehicle there. But yeah, six people in just about any car is not going to work out.
No.
Rory, the driver of the car, remembered that he had seen a property down the road with a strange warning sign posted, and he wanted to show it to his buddies. So he pulled the car up to the property and shined the spotlight at the sign. They all laughed as they read what it said. This is a direct quote from the sign. Warning, you are entering the ROC. This is a restricted area. Only red-blooded, patriotic Christian Americans are authorized for access upon approval and verification of credentials by the commanding authority. The use of deadly force is authorized for use on those found in noncompliance with above.
Whoa.
You basically need a lawyer just to be able to spell that out.
I don't even know what any of that means. I know.
Yeah. So,
like, what credentials can you show to prove that you are a red-blooded, patriotic Christian American?
Isn't patriotic pretty subjective? Yeah. So right there, you're already out. So yeah, this is obviously a very crazy sign. So as I think most people would, the young men thought the sign was a joke. They thought it was silly, and since they were in the middle of their evening of harmless trouble, they decided to steal the sign along with a cheap solar light that was on the same property. The group then got back into the car and headed back home to Susanville for the night. So my younger self still likes to play the game worst case scenario.
Right.
So if I see the sign that says somebody could possibly shoot you, even if it was like ha 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 in my head, not Melissa's brain. Melissa's brain's like, we're in danger. Get out of here.
You in danger, girl.
Yeah. You in danger, girl. Yeah. That whole meme comes to life for me. Basically every day of my life. That's how I live.
Back at the property that the men had just stolen the sign and light from was a family of five from Reno, Nevada. They were up at Antelope Lake staying in their remote cabin, far from civilization. It was the Wallen Reed family. Chad, Carrie, and their three children loved visiting the family cabin at the lake. Chad's grandparents had built the cabin in the 70s, and it had been a beloved retreat for the family for years. They made memories fishing, boating, swimming, and having snowball fights in the winter. The location of the cabin was truly isolated, with all the electricity coming from a generator and absolutely no cell phone service or phone at all. But that really did not bother this particular family. And they really liked being able to get away and be in nature and just forget about the hustle and bustle of daily life. And as the family was describing this, we watched a Dateline on this. Of course, we'll link that in the show notes. But as I was listening to the wife, Carrie, describe like how they just loved being off the grid like this, I was getting like anxiety because right. I would absolutely hate that whole setup.
Yeah.
They are out literally in the middle of nowhere. They have no cell phone signal. They don't even have like a landline. Power from a generator? All of it.
That's like post-hurricane apocalypse.
I am not about that at all. And then like –
not voluntarily.
Yeah. And then like, of course, like no Wi-Fi. Like, Melissa, what do you do when your Wi-Fi just like kicks off for like a few minutes?
I mean, I full panic at 5 minutes because I realize it's all over.
I think I'm never going to contact the outside world again. So I could not hack it in a remote cabin in the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. That would not be the life for me.
I get the appeal of being away from things, but there is such thing as being too far away from things.
Right.
And this is it.
I don't even want to be disconnected at all. Like, just keep me here with all the internet and phones and everything else. So Chad was a loving father who doted on his children and made their safety his number one priority, which he says was instilled in him thanks to his time spent as one of the elite Army Rangers. With the closest sheriff's office over an hour's drive away, Chad and Carrie knew it was up to them to protect themselves and their family when they were at this remote cabin in the woods.
Right.
Break-ins were very common at cabins in that area, and the Wallen Reed cabin had already been broken into numerous times, including once earlier that same year. Because of the threat of intruders, Chad gave Carrie a revolver and taught her how to shoot so that she would be able to protect herself and their children in the event that they were ever attacked while they were at the cabin. So the cabin was also well-stocked with other firearms, including an AR-15, many other guns, shotguns, lots of ammunition for all the guns. They were just kind of like a hunt. They were hunters, you know, so right. They had a lot of different weapons and stuff there at the camp.
I wonder how much of that kind of stuff is brought home with them when they go to Nevada.
Well, if you know there's break-ins, I hope they take it all with them.
That's what I'm saying.
I mean, like, I wouldn't leave firearms and ammo.
That's what I'm kind of thinking, like, okay, well, if you keep leaving that stuff there and then people know all out in these cabins, there's that stuff that – it's not right that people would break in, but they know it's there. And
right.
It's kind of a target. That 4th of July weekend, the Wallen Reeds headed to the cabin to celebrate the holiday. Friends of the family joined them and set up a camper on the property close to the road. In the very early hours of the morning of July 2nd, around 2 a.m., Chad said that he was suddenly awakened by commotion taking place outside. When he got up to check on things, he noticed a spotlight being shined around his property, and he heard laughter and yelling and then saw a car speed off. Chad got into his truck and drove down to the end of the driveway to inspect the situation, and he noticed that one of the solar lights that was used to mark the edge of the property was missing, which at this point he's confused as to what happened. He went back into the house and went back to bed. When the sun came up that morning, the family went down to check on their friends in the camper and noticed footprints in the dirt nearby, but they were unable to match these shoe prints to anyone else in their party's shoes.
Okay, this part like kind of made me laugh.
Okay, like, I thought that too.
I felt bad afterwards because I'm like, okay, that's not really funny, but like, I don't know, something about that was funny. Like the whole family's down there inspecting shoe prints, and they're like, everyone, go get your shoes. Like, let's go see. Like,
yeah, Detective Gumshoe.
it's just extreme. I feel like for like considering what had happened, like it wasn't really that serious.
Well, they hear him laughing. That was the thing, right. I thought. Like you hear them laughing, so it doesn't sound sinister or anything.
Right,
it sounds
exactly.
Stupid, but it doesn't sound sinister. Yeah, and then you know this level of paranoia is just being built upon.
Exactly.
If you're out checking everybody's shoes,
you're on edge.
You're on edge. Yeah. You started at that like an 11.
Yeah.
So it appeared to everyone that a stranger had been on the property and the family had no idea what their intentions were or if they would be back.
Later that afternoon, we're still on July 2nd, Carrie was at the cabin alone with the kids when she looked out the window and noticed a strange Jeep slowly driving up the driveway with a young male in the driver's seat. She didn't know whether the man was lost or looking for help, but she grabbed her revolver and told her kids to stay down. Again, this is a little bit of an overreaction for seeing somebody just driving up your driveway at 2 in the afternoon.
Right.
I know it's remote and it's out in the middle of nowhere, but I don't know.
I feel like as a family, they're at this point, they're thinking something's going to happen. Like they're just
preparing. But you're building yourself up for...
Everyone is very high. And I wonder, it sounds like maybe the dad was... at the height of this.
Right.
I mean, they talked about this, the kids, you know, saying, we asked dad what would happen and right. he said he'd protect, like that was. Like,
are we going to be okay?
Yeah.
And, like, all that.
Instead of just like letting your kids, you know, be like, yeah, it'll be fine. Don't worry. You don't need to say dad will protect us, blah, blah, blah,
right.
blah.
Right. Because then you start putting ideas like, well, what do we need protecting from? Like, exactly. you know, what's going on? Like what's going
to do their kids
happen?
Not ask questions? That's all mine would do.
Yeah. Yeah, seriously. I know. I would just be like, no, it's fine. Just go find something to do.
There you go. But not on the laptop because that's not going to work. Yeah.
So the Jeep eventually backed up and drove away without any confrontation, but Carrie was extremely uneasy from that moment on, she says. That night, Carrie and the kids fell asleep on the couch while watching a movie, and Chad and his friends that were staying on their property with them did a little target practice with the AR-15, and then they sat outside on the porch just hanging out. Between 9 and 10 p.m., Chad's friends noticed that a car had pulled up just outside of the property and had shut the headlights off. At this point, Chad went into, I guess, some sort of self-preservation mode, and he picked up the AR-15 and fired a warning shot completely into the darkness, not at anything.
Yeah.
Gun safety 101, you don't do this
right.
type of thing. But that's what he did. So the next thing that he saw was a man running away in the darkness, and then the car, and then the car that he had seen had sped off again, just as it had the night before. Chad was very irritated and felt that someone was stalking his family and he was going to get to the bottom of it. He took off after the car, armed with the AR-15 as well as a handgun, but Chad said that his intention that night was simply to catch up to the vehicle and get their tag number, quote, or something.
Are you ready to revolutionize the way you enjoy food and essentials at home? Introducing Dash Pass from DoorDash, your ultimate ticket to convenience and savings. With Dash Pass, you gain exclusive access to unlimited $0 delivery fees on eligible orders, along with members-only deals and discounts that will leave your wallet smiling. Whether you're craving the flavors of your favorite restaurants, need groceries from across town, or anything in between, Dash Pass ensures that everything you need is just a few clicks away, delivered right to your door. With Dash Pass, not only do you enjoy $0 delivery fees, but you'll also benefit from lower service fees on eligible orders, making it the most affordable way to satisfy your cravings and stock up on essentials from your local favorites. What I really love is how quickly Dash Pass pays for itself. On average, it takes just two orders, which makes it a no-brainer investment for your budget. And as if that weren't enough, Dash Pass grants you special access to exclusive promotions and menu items, adding an extra layer of excitement to your DoorDash experience. You get all this for only $9.99 a month, which is a small price to pay for unlimited convenience and savings. My family and I have had DoorDash for the past year or so, and while I make most meals at home, I don't know that I could mom without it. I used it twice just this past week while we were dealing with a stomach bug at home, and it was so nice to have and to be able to focus on getting better and not running all over town to pick everything up for everyone. Don't wait. Sign up for Dash Pass now and unlock a world of possibilities, all from the comfort of your home. Dash Pass from DoorDash, delivering joy, convenience, and savings straight to your doorstep.
Get more from delivery for less with Dash Pass. $0 delivery fees and reduced service fees on eligible DoorDash orders. Sign up for Dash Pass today and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change. Terms apply. Open the door to $0 delivery fees and savings you can't get anywhere else. Sign up for Dash Pass today, only on DoorDash, and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change, terms apply.
Before we get into what happened next, we want to go back to these six young men from the beginning of the story. These are the same six young men that had stolen that solar light on the Wall and Reed property. As it would turn out, the guys had gotten wind of another party that was supposed to be happening up near Antelope Lake on July 2nd. After attending a barbecue together, the same six men got into the Sebring driven by Rory McGuire and headed off once again in search of a party. They stopped and picked up a bottle of vodka and some beer to take along with them. At this point, there's no room in this vehicle.
Right.
I don't even know how they're sitting in there. Along the way, the men were going to pass the Wall and Reed property again, and they decided to stop by and steal more solar lights for whatever reason. Fun and pranks and bad ideas, I guess.
Right.
But this time, they were horrified to hear what sounded like a gunshot, and Rory took off in the car in a panic. The gunshot he heard was that warning shot we talked about before that Chad had fired off. The next part of the story has two different versions. There's Chad's version, and then there's the story of the six young men in the Sebring. We are going to tell you both of these versions. Before we get into these two stories, though, we're going to take a quick break for this week's sponsor. Summer's here in Florida, which means we are basically living on the surface of the sun. So to stay cool, ModCloth has us covered when it comes to chic and literally cool clothing. You can nab everything from travel-inspired prints to breezy sundresses. They are so adorable, even I would go cardigan-free.
Since it's summer, we spend a lot of time in the pool as an act of survival, which means we are constantly in swimsuits. Luckily, ModCloth has the perfect swimsuits. Whether you want one piece or two, they offer a wide variety of styles in a full-size range.
Their site makes it super easy to find exactly what you're looking for. In fact, I searched the keyword pockets and found a ton of adorable dresses and skirts with pockets, which is my favorite fashion idea ever. I have my eye on a navy A-line dress with red hearts all over it, and the best part is that it comes with functional pockets. Pockets for snacks.
To get 15% off your purchase of $100 or more, go to modcloth.com and enter code MOMS at checkout. Again, to get 15% off your purchase of $100 or more, go to modcloth.com, enter code MOMS at checkout. Hurry, this offer expires on October 10th, 2018.
Now, back to the show.
So according to Chad, his military training kicked in, and he felt that he needed to pursue the threat, which to him was these people that he didn't know what they were doing on his property, and he felt that he needed to handle it in order to keep his family safe. He said that he was taught in the military to never back down and to neutralize the threat. So I have never been in the military, and I can't speak to what they teach in the military, but I do know that in the civilian world where the rest of us live, chasing down a threat is actually frowned upon quite a bit.
Yeah.
That's not something that you're really allowed to do. So basically the whole thing is that if you are feeling threatened or if someone has come onto your property, if they are leaving and retreating, like, you are no longer within your right to – you can't just chase them down and go and try to neutralize the threat.
Yeah.
That's not how it works.
A threat if they're not on your property.
Exactly. And if they are actively leaving, they are no longer an immediate threat to your life or your family or your property or anything else. So at that point, you don't have any reason to – pursue a fight with them. So already I was not a fan at this point of Chad Wallen Reed and the way that he's choosing to handle this situation. Just lots of red flags and warning bells going off about him and all of that. So Chad is now engaged in a frantic chase down a dark, deserted road, and he has no idea who is in the vehicle in front of him or why they were on his property. He said that someone in the car started shining a very bright spotlight at him, which we know the guys did have a spotlight. They were using it to do their shenanigans, you know, those two nights they were out there. And so they shine the spotlight at Chad while Chad is chasing them. And essentially Chad was blinded by the light while he was driving. And Chad says that he then saw three flashes and heard three gunshots being fired in his direction. So Chad is saying, he's alleging that these men that are in the Sebring are firing a gun at him, you know, while they're driving down the road. So he says that he pulled out his pistol and pointed it out the window at the Sebring and just started firing into the air.
Yeah, which I would assume in the military, again, I wasn't in the military either, that's not what you do.
That's not what they teach you there either.
Not like all willy-nilly.
No, no, no. That's like I said, number one, you don't know who's in the car. There could be kids in the car. There's innocent people in the car. Like, you don't know. You can't just blindly shoot into a vehicle.
There could be other vehicles coming.
You know? Like, you are putting so many lives in danger unnecessarily, like, and you could just stop and turn around and go home and just forget all of this nonsense. Yeah. That part of this whole story really irritates me.
It's just upsetting.
It is upsetting because it also it would have been so avoidable.
Right.
So after Chad had returned fire, I'm using that very loosely, he noticed that someone in the Sebring had tossed the stolen solar lights out the window, and then he saw what he believed was a piece of plastic being waved out the window of the car, but he couldn't really make out what it was or, you know, what they were doing with it. After a 7.6-mile chase, the Sebring missed a turn and ended up turning down a random dirt road that led to a meadow. And Chad was hot on their tail and not going to give up until he confronted whoever it was that was in that car. And this is just also dumb, like, as we've been saying. It's just so stupid.
Right.
And it's putting yourself really in a bad situation that you don't have to be in also.
Right. You know? That's what I'm thinking. You have these kids at home. You're wanting to protect them and stuff. But now you're leaving them on the property and chasing somebody with a gun. I don't see the thought process here.
Yeah. So when the Sebring reached the end of the dirt road, it made a quick 180 and slid into position so that it was now facing Chad's truck and getting ready to drive back past Chad in the opposite direction. Chad said at this point that he feared for his life and he felt that the people in the Sebring were looking for a gunfight. So Chad grabbed his AR-15, pointed it out the window, and just started spraying bullets at the Sebring. Just willy-nilly, just firing. The windows exploded. There was bullet holes riddling the vehicle. And finally, the car came to a rest in an embankment off the side of the dirt road. Chad says he does not recall how many shots he fired.
After the gun smoke cleared, Chad got out of his truck to go assess the damage he had done and, in his words, to clear the Sebring. He said that as he approached the car with his trusty AR-15 at the ready, he heard a young-sounding voice say, "We give up. Don't kill us." Chad noticed that the driver of the vehicle was hunched over with a bullet wound in his neck, but Chad did not stick around to check for vital signs. He did not know who any of the men in the car were, and in his version of the story, he said that he told the young men he was going to call for help. Remember, there's no cell service or nearby police station in this remote area of California, which to me, California, I just didn't even know there was a part of California like this.
I didn't either.
I felt really dumb. I was like, really?
I mean, it's a big state, what? But yeah, I had no idea.
My knowledge of geography is real, real bad. So Chad decides to head back to his cabin to consult with his friends and wife about what they should do. Instead of going to the police or anything else, he goes home. That is one of the more upsetting things to me. So when he tells his friends what's happened, they all sort of laughed it off, which makes me worry about what kind of jokes this guy told.
Right.
And until Chad told him that he seriously thought he may have killed the driver, then they started to take him seriously. He then goes inside to tell his wife, Carrie, the news. Chad decided that he needed to drive closer to the nearest town to get cell reception and dial 911.
How much time are you wasting?
Right.
After you like already realize that you have shot up a vehicle full of people and you've already realized that the driver...
You know they need help.
Yeah, and the driver is unconscious. And like it just is mind-blowing how much time he spent doing absolutely nothing and talking this over with people... instead of getting help. I have goosebumps even saying that because it really just blows my mind.
Well, his wife, they even say in the Dateline, and I might have read this too, that she got dressed. Like, nobody's in any rush with this.
Right.
He's in a rush to chase them down the road, but not in a rush to get help.
If you guys get a chance, you have got to look up this Dateline see these people in action because, I mean, I don't like to be like rude or judgmental, but this is like one of the strangest families I have ever seen. I don't even want to make assumptions about what's going on there, but something's going on there.
Yeah, it's not the normal you see on Dateline for sure. So as Chad drives off, tries to make a call, tries to call 911, the phone drops. And so he has to drive further to make another call. He explained to the operator that there had been a shooting, but he didn't have an address and couldn't really explain how to find the six men out there in the middle of the wilderness down a random dirt road.
One of the men in the Sebring was Justin Lewis Smith. He goes by Lewis, and his account of what happened that night has some key differences to what Chad's version of the events were. Lewis admitted that the group of friends had stolen the solar lights from the Wallen Reed property in a random act of petty vandalism after seeing the ridiculous sign in front of Chad's property. They were essentially just a group of bored guys looking to mess with whoever lived on the ROC, which, by the way, evidently stood for Republic of Chad, which I just have so many words for.
To me, that sums up this guy, though, really.
Yeah, it does.
He thinks it's a Republic of Chad, yeah.
Lewis said that when the group of young men were at the property the second time and heard the gunshot, they got scared and bolted out of there as fast as possible, as anybody would.
Right.
These guys were not looking for a fight. They were just out there trying to have fun and make each other laugh. So when Chad got in his truck and started chasing them down, they panicked and tried to flee as fast as possible.
According to Lewis, after the men had driven about half a mile, they noticed what appeared to be a green laser light shining into the Sebring they were traveling in. It quickly became obvious that what they were seeing was actually the laser sight of a gun. The men saw the green laser first, followed by a red laser, and then came an onslaught of gunfire. The young men were absolutely terrified. They were out in the middle of nowhere with no help nearby, and they had what they could only assume was a madman chasing them down and shooting at them. In an effort to defuse the situation, the man in the passenger side of the Sebring, Cesar Gonzalez, attempted to hang himself out the window to shine the spotlight directly at Chad's truck in hopes that he would be temporarily blinded and that the young men would have time to ditch him. The tactic did not work, and when Gonzalez heard a bullet whiz by his head, he knew he had better get back inside the vehicle.
I can't imagine how terrifying that whole scene playing out would would even be. That's just...
So this is my thought, and this could be totally wrong. I would seem like, okay, you've seen the shotguns, and now somebody's chasing you. You have that adrenaline, right? Everybody's in the car, and you're all like, oh my gosh, what do we do? And then they, as soon as somebody's going out, like they're trying to like make this situation right. They, you know, they really are doing what they can to stop it.
Right.
But there's no stopping this guy.
Right. At this point, the young men in the Sebring were desperate to lose Chad and get themselves to safety. They tossed the stolen solar lights out the window, and Gonzalez attempted to wave a white T-shirt out the window in an effort to signal that they were trying to surrender. But Chad was allegedly unfazed and continued to fire shots at the Sebring while driving down the dark and secluded road. Rory, who, as we said before, is the driver, then missed the turn that he intended to take that would have led the men out of the area and back in the direction that they wanted to go. And so they ended up on this small dirt road that quickly came to an end. And with Chad following and shooting closely behind them, they had very few options for escape. And Rory made a very quick U-turn and attempted to position himself so that he could drive back the other direction towards the main road. At this point, according to the occupants of the Sebring, chaos broke out. There was just wave after wave of gunfire exploding into the car. Rory had been hit and had fallen unconscious. Lewis had been shot in the calf. And Robert, another passenger, had also been shot in the leg. Gonzalez, who was riding in the passenger seat, realized that Rory was unconscious. And he actually picked up his friend's leg and moved it to the brake pedal to depress the brake.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
Yes. Can you imagine? It's terrible. So when the car came to a stop, the Chanley brothers got out and ran for their lives. They did not feel safe staying in the area. They wanted to get as far away as possible, which I don't fault them at all for that.
No. So according to Lewis, Chad then got out of his truck holding the AR-15 and said something along the lines of, "You MFers come by my house and shoot? I got kids." And that was a quote. The injured men in the vehicle shouted back that they did not have any weapons and had never fired shots at the Wall and Reed cabin, and they begged him to call them an ambulance. But Chad shouted back that if they ever returned, he would kill them all. And then he got back into his truck and left, with Rory still unresponsive in the driver's seat and two men with gunshot wounds still in the car. Frankly, I'm shocked that there weren't more injuries with him just standing up and shooting into their car. At this point in the story, we can see that there really are very big differences between what Chad says happened and what these young men in the Sebring say happened. In Chad's story, the men had fired at him first. In Lewis's story, Chad had chased him down, shooting at them for stealing solar lights off their office property. After Chad had left the scene of the shooting, the Chanley brothers, who had taken off on foot, came back to the Sebring to check on their friends. They noticed that Rory was in really bad shape. He was unresponsive at this point and had fingers missing from his left hand, and although he was still breathing and attempting to speak, they knew he was in critical condition and in desperate need of a hospital. The men worked together to move Rory to the backseat of the vehicle.
Lewis made a makeshift tourniquet to slow the bleeding in his leg, while Gonzalez attempted to get the vehicle to start so that the men could drive themselves to get help. But in a nightmarish twist, the oil pan had been ruptured, leaking a trail of oil all over the meadow, and the vehicle would not start. None of the men had a cell phone signal out there in the wilderness, so the group decided that the two least injured men would run up the road in search of help.
Man.
That's terrifying. The whole thing is just so, like, horrifying to even think about any of this happening.
And you know help is not close. Even when you are able to start making calls, it's still not a while. Yeah,
exactly. So after running for what seemed like an eternity, the men came up on a trailer near a campsite. The people that were staying there also did not have a cell phone signal, but they offered to take the men to the main campground so that hopefully they could get a landline and get a call out. Meanwhile, Chad had met up with a sheriff's deputy named Juan Cervantes and a fish and wildlife warden named Kyle Kroll. He told them that he may have shot someone and warned the officers that there may be kids out there with guns. At this point, he did not tell the officers that he had been shot at, which I think is a very important part of the story.
Yeah.
Because you think you would mention that right away.
Yeah.
If that was a true thing that had happened.
Right. Your life was in danger.
Right.
Officers arrived at the campground where two of the victims were located and noted that they appeared to be very scared. The two men took the officers back to the Sebring. It had been between 2 and 3 hours since the men had left on foot to get help, and they had no idea what horror would await them when they returned. Officers responded to a gruesome scene with a videographer in tow. Vin Staley had been filming for the show Wild Justice and was able to capture the crime scene in detail. He said it was worse than anything you'd ever see in a movie. The first responders noticed Lewis laying on the ground, bleeding from his leg with a tourniquet that was way too tightly wrapped around him. They also noticed Rory laying in the backseat of the car and knew that he was close to death. The injured were all taken to the nearest hospital, and Chad Wallenreed was taken in for further questioning.
Chad maintained his story that the men had shot at his home, shot at him from their vehicle, and that he feared for the life of his children. I want to read some of the quotes that he said to police during his interview, kind of to give a perspective on Chad's state of mind. So the first quote, "I served 5 years in the flipping military, and I killed people on the other side of this world. I don't need to effing kill kids in my state." This is a bizarre thing to say after this event has taken place.
Yeah.
The next one was, "That's what the military trains you to do is effing, you know, react. Those kids don't stand an effing chance."
None of that's coming from a place of like, oh my gosh, I hate that this happened. Like,
or like, I've hurt some people.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. No, all of this is very like, it's just so aggressive. Like, it's just so like.
It is. It's over. Like, why are you saying any of this?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, have some compassion because they are people. They have families, you know, all of this. And clearly they did not have anything. They told you, we didn't do anything. You know,
right.
we're sorry. The next morning on July 3rd, Rory's mom got the worst phone call of her life. Her son was in critical condition and she needed to go to the hospital quickly. Back at the Wallenreed cabin, police were raiding and confiscating all the weapons and collecting any evidence that may be present. One officer took Chad on a drive to recreate the events of the night before on camera. Chad pointed out the area where he said the young men had fired on him, as well as the area where he said he fired his pistol back at them. And while they're on that kind of trip, he was very specific about where he said he fired.
Like,
so basically they could be like, you did this here? Okay, well, let's look for shell casings.
Right.
You know, like,
exactly.
You're not going to be off. It wasn't like an area. It was like, right here is where it happened. He was adamant that he had used a small caliber handgun to fire on the men and had never mentioned that he used an AR-15, which they're going to be able to tell.
Right.
You idiot. When they arrived at the meadow where the shootout had ended, they could see that the other officers had already marked several spots where they had found shell casings. Upon seeing all of the evidence markers, Chad quickly changed his story. He now admitted that there was another firearm used, the AR-15. He may have been reluctant to admit that he had used that particular weapon because it is illegal in California to own this AR-15, but he had bought it legally in Reno, Nevada. But the main part of Chad's story that never changed was that he was sure that the men had shot at him first. This was a fact in the story that could never be proven. Officers never located a gun in the Sebring or any of the men traveling in it.
That part just made me so angry when I like learned like that was like a fact that like they did not have a weapon. They definitely weren't shooting at him first. Like,
right.
It just makes me so like it just drives me crazy to think about people like Chad Wallenreed living in this world. Chad was arrested on charges of attempted murder and booked into the county jail. Chad's wife was devastated. She said it was very hard for them to take her husband away and that she never expected that outcome and never expected to be away from her husband in this manner.
Well, okay, does anyone ever expect these kind of things? Who sits at home and is like, one day I think my husband's going to go to prison for shooting people?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Nobody does.
No. So Chad stewed away in his jail cell and convinced himself that he was well within his rights to have handled the situation the way that he did. He got himself so worked up and angry over the fact that he had been arrested, and in his mind, the kids in the Sebring had been terrorizing his family, and he was only doing what any good husband and father would have done in the same situation. And his wife, Carrie, agreed. She says that she has no regrets about that night, even still to this day.
Personally,
yeah. You could think, like, hindsight would give, like, a little bit of insight.
A little bit of clarity.
Like,
yeah.
You know, like, but she has no regrets about it and says that she believes that her husband just was doing what he had to do and that he was protecting them and keeping them safe. Those were her exact words. He was protecting us and keeping us safe.
Okay, but who keeps you safe now? Because now he's right. In jail and he's not there to do this. So
right.
That upset me so much when they were talking. First of all, I feel like they fed off of each other and
yeah.
He would get upset and then she was more upset. And then it was just like this high intensity relationship basically. But who would say when your husband's in jail for, you know, crimes that he committed that he didn't really have to, I'm glad this is what happened. I wouldn't change
right.
Anything.
Say, well, I have
she
no
said,
regrets.
Are you out of your flipping mind?
I know. Well, I
yeah,
would say
we
yes.
Have questions. We have questions.
So back at the hospital, Rory was fighting for his life with his parents by his side. But just a few hours after his parents arrived, Rory passed away. A few hours later, Chad was officially charged with first-degree murder, and his bail was set at $1 million.
Chad's attorney, John Olson, attempted to prove that Chad was within his right to fire at the young men who had come onto his property. California does not have a stand your ground law, but they do have a jury instruction that states that a person under threat has a right to stand his or her ground and even pursue an assailant. Olson insists that seems like it goes a step further than stand your ground.
Yeah, and I would be curious, and I didn't actually look up that jury. I just that was a piece of information that came from the Dateline.
Yeah,
I would have been curious to go look that up and find out exactly what that says, because I can't imagine that a state has it written, whether it's a law or a jury selection, that says that you're allowed to like pursue.
That seems a little much.
Because really, doing that, like you are putting yourself in danger.
Oh yeah.
So it doesn't seem like that would be a legal thing. Maybe it is.
Yeah.
Maybe they're crazier in California than I thought.
What's going on in California? So Olson insists that Chad is the perfect person for that defense because he has a clean record and has never been in trouble with the law before. Chad felt so confident that his attorney would be able to get him acquitted that he turned down a deal from the DA.
You should never do that.
Yeah. I mean, you killed somebody. You know.
Like, you know what happened.
Yeah. You know what happened. There's no, like, could you have or did you not? It definitely happened. Selecting a jury in this case proved to be quite difficult because the residents of the area were either a lot like Chad, had a lot of their guns, you know, had these areas of property where these kind of things did happen, and or they were transplants from bigger cities. So where maybe this wasn't like a normal occurrence to have all these guns right. and stuff in their home. So they were very worried that they would ever be able to get an unbiased jury, really. But they managed to find a jury that Chad's attorney felt very confident with. I'm not trusting this attorney.
No, he's a slime ball.
Yeah. In the end, the entire case boiled down to whether or not the group of young men had shot at Chad. And this was something that the defense was unable to prove and there was no evidence for.
Near the end of the trial, the DA had finally gotten back a copy of Chad's military records that he had requested months prior. The information inside was shocking. Chad had been in the military, but that's about where that story ended. He had never fulfilled his commitment, and he was actually asked to leave the Army after some questionable behavior, including forging sick leave papers and carrying a personal firearm into the barracks. He was also guilty of wearing Ranger badges when he was not, in fact, an Army Ranger, as he had told the police and I guess his wife and everyone he knew.
Yeah.
That was like his whole big thing was like, I was this big Army Ranger. Like right. I know how to handle myself. And like, mm-hmm. you know, that was kind of his whole entire like defense really.
Right.
So these big lies called Chad's entire character into question as they should have. When Chad was interviewed for Dateline before his trial ended, he told Heath Morrison that he did not believe he would be acquitted because most people had a negative opinion about him.
Did they see him, meet him, or talk to him? Because if so, then yeah.
So he was right. After less than a day of deliberation, Chad was found guilty of first-degree murder and sentenced to 80 years in prison.
Wow.
His wife, Carrie, is devastated, but says that she will never leave her man's side. She is convinced that he's her soulmate. She's never going to move on and try to remarry. She always is going to be with him. And that is that. So the cabin was sold to pay legal bills, and Carrie says all they have left are fond memories.
This makes me so sad for their kids because of how adamant the two of them are that this was the right thing to do. I feel like whatever would have gotten your dad home safe that night and nobody to die, that would have been the best choice.
Right.
But the whole thing kind of upset me with her too. Like if you had all these break-ins prior – you know, prior to this night, and then the night before, you know, you think somebody's been on the property, you've been investigating yourself, I would pack up my kids and go home. This isn't your primary residence. It's different to me if it's your home. And I get you don't want to leave, you don't want to back down from whatever. But come on, if you're really that worried about your kids, you could not stop me from taking my kids. Right. I would say you stay home, do what you have to do. I'm out of here.
Yeah.
I wouldn't, if I was truly scared people were trying to hurt my family, I wouldn't have them there if I had the second option. Some people don't have that option. So that kind of whole thing upset me.
Yeah. No. Yeah. And I agree though, like about them like telling the kids that this was the right thing to do and all of that, because I guess though, like I kind of understand from their point of view, because the alternative is to say daddy was wrong, like, you know, and like he did the wrong thing, but which
he did the right wrong thing with maybe the right intentions, though.
You know,
he thought he was doing the right thing. But
as it turns out, you just can't chase people down and shoot at them.
Yeah. I mean, really,
you know, that's really what it boils down to.
Yeah.
So yeah, very, very interesting story. Probably one of the more interesting Datelines I've ever seen. So I would definitely encourage everybody to go watch that one if they get a chance.
Right.
So Melissa, last thing before we go.
Yes, go ahead. What do we got?
So Brenny, my love. What's up, Brenny? Okay. Just kidding. So she wants to know, bougie reasons why we couldn't go to prison. Do you know what that means, Melissa?
Okay.
Is that too hipster of a word for you?
I mean, I've seen the youths use it, so I feel like I can use it in a sentence. I don't know the exact answer to that. But Mandy, what about you? What are your...
I have
explain bougie first.
Well, I guess it's just like
you don't
ridiculous.
Know
like fancy, silly, like just stupid. Like you're just like so like, I don't even know.
Well, this was a great one to pick.
Yeah, great job, Mandy. Okay, no, I don't even know how... It's like, you know, it's one of those words where like you know the meaning, but like you can't.
Yeah, that doesn't work on SATs. So,
yeah, I don't. Well, I've gotten this far in life figuring things out that way. So anyway, so I have actually a lot, but I'm a very like girly girl. I like to have certain girl things. Like I like to wear makeup and I like to have perfume and I just like to like be able to straighten my hair. I mean, all these things are reasons why I would be really miserable in prison.
Right.
And another thing that I was thinking of today, because, you know, I always have my headphones around my neck and I'm always listening to music. Maybe you don't know that, but I am at home. I just put my headphones in and listen to music while I clean or while I do anything or whatever. I think I would be really upset not to be able to listen to music in jail. Like that would be absolute torture. I love having something to listen to. Like,
you could listen to screaming and yelling
and
fights.
No, that sounds terrible.
That sounds like what I do already with children.
But yeah, so like just not being able to have like girly stuff and like not being able to, I don't know, put on like fuzzy socks and like, you know, like, I don't know, like all that.
Those
I
mean, are all very
on
valid.
On top of like obviously.
Getting shanked.
I was going to say, on top of like missing your family and stuff like that.
Priorities.
But those are like obvious ones. Yeah. And that's what.
I don't think bougie means obvious.
Exactly.
But we don't know.
No. But so anyway, so it's those kinds of things. Like I said, I think not being able to listen to music would really drive me crazy.
That's a good one. Okay. So I have a few. Number one is I look terrible in French braids, and that seems to be like the most common hairstyle in prison.
I don't have enough hair to French braid.
I know, but I also have a five head, and that like nothing shows your five head more than a French braid.
That's true.
I can't do that. That's too much for me. Number two, I need a fan to go to sleep.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Right?
Me too.
That'd
yes.
be miserable. Yes. Like I need maybe somebody could blow in my face
there's
or
like
something.
Not only is there no fan, but there's like no AC.
Oh yeah.
Remember? Wait.
I feel like we did learn that.
We did with
everywhere.
Anthony Curcio.
You're right. Okay. See,
and
we learned things.
It probably is everywhere. I highly doubt if they didn't have it in whatever state that was. What was it, like Arizona? It was like another hot state.
Yeah.
Like if they didn't have it there, then I doubt we have it here.
Oh man, I can't do this.
Yeah.
My last thing is peeing in front of people other than my children. I would get a bladder infection immediately. There's no way I can do that.
I didn't think they had like community. I thought they had stalls. I mean, in Orange is the New Black, they have stalls.
You know, they could easily go in there. I think it would still be... No, in your cell. You have a pee toilet thing.
Oh, there's no, like, common area toilets?
Mandy, is prison, not when you're in your cell.
Is prison not like Orange is the New Black?
I think you're getting your information from the wrong place. I did think of some pros, though. I have two pros. Number one, you can eat honey buns around the clock and you don't count calories in prison. That sounds wonderful.
Yeah, I would still be killing calories in prison probably, at least for the first year. And then I'd be like, forget this.
How many more years do I have? I'm done here. Okay. And the other thing is socks. They wear socks all the time in prison. And they wear, if you watch 60 Days In, they're always wearing like sweatsuits and stuff. That's like my uniform. I'd be so comfortable.
Yeah.
And you don't have to look cute. If you look cute, it might actually be a problem for you. I could do real well. So I'm considering my crimes now.
I was going to say, we're supposed to be listing reasons why we don't want to go to prison.
Yeah, I'm trying to look at the bright side if I do. I have a plan in place. So yeah, those are our things for this week. Last thing before we go. Thank you, Brenny, for that question. So we have a couple promos this week. We have three promos this week. The first one is from our friends Carrie and Jody with Moms on the Rock. Rocks. Could be on a rock. I don't really know. So Moms on the Rocks, they have their it's kind of conversational. Well, no, it is conversational. Lots of topics, pop culture, all that fun stuff. They are lovely, funny, and we adore them. The next one is Boozy Movies with Hannah and Julia. It was formerly called Film Roast. I almost got it wrong. film roast, and now they're called Boozy Movies. They're so funny, lots of pop culture references. I just eat that stuff up, so it's perfect. And the last one is Murder Road Trip with Haley and Jess. They actually just covered, I found out today, they covered the Mike Williams disappearance that we did last week.
Yes.
Yeah, so after we posted about our episode, Haley wrote me and said, is this guy? Because they were doing the same one. So if you want more information, their show is really good and they do a great job. Then you can check out Murder Road Trip for more information on that case.
Yeah.
So those are our promos for the week, guys.
We love them
all. Yeah, stick around, listen to those, find a new show to listen to since we're only here every other week for a few more weeks. And yeah, that's our last announcement, I guess. We'll be back in 2 weeks.
Yes.
And we're close to being on an every week schedule. That'll be in September.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
Okay.
Great.
Uh-huh. All right, guys. Thanks. Well, we hope you guys have a wonderful 2 weeks and we will see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, I'm Carrie.
And I'm Jody.
We're the Moms on the Rocks. We take interest in Pinterest, but mainly for the cocktail recipes and memes.
No pretenses, no Valencia filters, just two friends talk about the real lives of women and moms.
From divorce and dating to teenagers and cohabitating.
Or love and marriage to the all inorganic baby carriage, we laugh at ourselves and each other as we try to pull this thing off without tripping over our own flip-flops.
So subscribe to Moms on the Rocks on your favorite podcast app and find us on Instagram and Twitter at MomsOTR.
Welcome to Boozy Movies, movie reviews with a little booze.
Each week, we get inebriated and opinionated, taking shots at one film, both literally and figuratively.
Listen to Boozy Movies at boozymovies.com, Apple Podcasts, and anywhere else podcasts are found.
And don't forget to join the conversation in our Facebook group, Boozy Movies Drinking Buddies.
Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Boozy Movies Pod.
Murder Road Trip is a bi-weekly podcast where I, Haley, travel to the scene of the crimes in my car, the Mobile Beast Lab. I am joined by my regular co-host, Jess, and our podcasting friends as we discuss the cases.
Join us on the road for snacks, mixtapes, games, and more as we make the research journey to crime scenes around the United States and the world.
Make sure to check your backseat,
and we'll see you at the next rest stop.
Thanks so much for listening to the Moms of Murder podcast. Make sure to check back with us next week for a new episode. You can also find us at momsandmurder.com, where you can connect with us via social media. Please make sure you subscribe and give us 5 stars, because giving us 4 stars would be a crime. Thanks so much.